Hello, fellow baseball nuts, and a big warm welcome to our very special mid-season episode of the Johnny and Josh podcast. We've been somewhat absent in our defence. The very thing we want to talk about is the very thing that's caused the reasons why we haven't been able to get together, and that is, of course, baseball. But it's great to be able to review, recap, regroup, regurgitate, anything else that begins with re, but most important of all, reunite with my baseball brothers. Great pleasure to welcome Eric, the producer. JC, the greatest living sports pundit the world's ever known.
Absurdity.
Is that,
that is, well, puffery. That's not even puffery. I think you could go to court and actually get, you know, money from me for that.
It's just not me saying that. It's BT Sport. They came to their senses. They say gave you the call, the London series. We all thought you weren't doing it.
I don't know about that, but it was certainly a good time. And the best part of it, got to see both of you guys face to face. We had a nice dinner. We hung out.
That was more than nice, guys. The three of us, just the three of us. It would have been lovely if Dave had been there as well, but obviously that wasn't to be. But just the three of us hanging out, talking baseball. You two meant that I missed my train, by the way. Did I tell you that? I got so carried away, I didn't look at the time. I missed my train. It took me an hour and a half to get across London. I didn't get home till 2:30 in the morning. That's how much I love you.
That's a sacrifice you made for our friendship. There you go.
Hey, talking of sacrifice, I'm sacrificing my time on the beach. Look. This is what I should be wearing. I was outside in 90-degree heat here in Marbella. I've come off the poolside. I've left the babes of Spain to come and join you two ugly mugs.
Those sunglasses, Gouldy, makes you look just like Joe Biden. You're about the same age, so, you know, I think it makes a lot of sense.
Okay, move on. As always, we want to big up the social media, the thing that neither Josh nor I truly understand. We are on Twitter. We are on Facebook. As Eric is doing, we're pointing down the bottom because apparently at the bottom of the screen, there's the buttons you're meant to be pressing. Ideally, saying that you like the show. We'd love you to give us a review. Facebook, Instagram. You know what it is. At Johnny and Josh. Check it out. I know we're not on regular. I know, you know, these big podcasts with millions of listeners, they're on every minute of every day, but that's because they've got egos. Egos out of control. We are men of the people, and I want you to remember that. And that's why we only turn up once every 4 or 5 or 6 weeks. But as always, we're also on YouTube. God knows why, because that's a visual medium. And as we know, we're not the best looking bunch. But get on YouTube, check out our channel. Every single episode from the past 4 seasons, and Eric's putting some serious hours editing this all together, they're all there in video format. So you can see our ugly mugs. You can remind yourself how unattractive we once were and how even more unattractive we now are. And they come with timestamps. Now, what does that mean? I have no idea. But apparently you can rewatch. You can skip to something of, you know, maybe your favorite segment. Maybe the only segment that was a favorite because the rest was rubbish. It's up to you. It's not so favorite segments. There's a lot of those, I imagine. Anyway. You're in control. Get on YouTube, get on Instagram, get on Facebook, get on Twitter. Have I missed anything, guys?
Goldie, you sound like a used car salesman. You can drive it right off the lot. You can drive this podcast right off the lot.
Okay. We've done all the link stuff. We've done all the pressing stuff. What have we got left? We've got Eric's trivia question. What are we going to do for us, Eric?
Well, we have trivia because it's been a while. But I think I'm going to jinx it now because I will be jinxing the Atlanta Braves, okay? Potentially. What? Potentially. Because at the time of recording, Austin Riley is currently on a 5-game home run streak. So he's hit a home run 5 consecutive games. But that's not the record, my friends. Oh, no.
Nope, not even close.
So my question to you is, who holds the record for most consecutive games hitting a home run? And you have
Josh
options.
Already knows the answer. He's nodding. He knows the answer. You don't even have to give him options. I've got no flipping clue.
Okay, well, here
this
you
is
go.
Unfair.
Is it A, Joey Votto, a man of good Canadian stock?
Or can I just point out at this point, Eric, that I'm looking at Josh. I'm looking at Josh. It's like a poker matchup. I'm looking for a tell. I'm looking for a reaction from Josh with that little tweak of his eyebrow.
This usually is where the ABC flows nicely, but usually not interrupted. So is it A, Joey Votto, or is it B, Ken Griffey Jr.? Or is it C, Jim Thome, who currently holds a record for most consecutive games hitting a home run? Is it A, Joey Votto, B, Ken Griffey Jr., or C, Jim Thome? Answer later on in the show.
a few long and hard games. Okay, fine. We're moving on. Right. So much discussed since our last episode, primarily because it was a long time ago. So we're just going to pick out some of the main points because there's loads of things to talk about. So where better to start than our usual battle number one? It's the news roundup. Okay, apparently there's been some baseball thingy, some London series. Both of you worked on it. Both of you were behind the scenes. I was in the viewing audience on the Sunday. Didn't get recognized once. Not once.
I got recognized lots of times.
Exactly. Exactly. Josh was the absolutely hounded.
Eric needs it. Eric needs it.
But I was there with the
with a shirt saying "I'm Eric the producer." That's his T-shirt that he wore.
Yeah, I went out and I sat with, you know, I mingled with all the masses while Johnny just stayed in his VIP area. So it's
Excuse me, I bought those tickets. Okay, yes, well, it's been amazing, guys. It's amazing. It's a whole month since the Cubbies and the Cards came to town. There was a hell of a buzz. I have to say, for the first time ever, I sensed the positivity about the media coverage in the UK, and for good reason. That it wasn't all good stories, but I have to say the overriding impression for me, guys, and my two fellow baseball fanatics, James Holden, fantasy baseball legend, and Big Al McKinley, deputy editor of the Sport and the Mirror, the boys both agreed with me that the first thing that struck us was how amazing the stadium was. What an amazing job they did. We walked in, and even though I've been there before, whether it be for a West Ham game, whether it was for the Olympics for its original usage, I didn't recognize it. Once I was inside, I thought I was in a baseball stadium. Could have been in America. Do you agree? Did they do a great job?
Yeah, absolutely. Murray Cook, who is the grounds person who did the first games back in 2019 with the Red Sox and the Yankees, came back and he learned and even perfected the way that the dimensions worked. I mean, this played more like a major league ballpark than the first series. So that was really good. Obviously, Gouldie, this wasn't going to be as big a spectacle as the first series because it wasn't the first. But I think that, to your point, what made it special is that it's showing commitment, right? Each time that Major League Baseball now comes back, it shows they're serious about it in the way that the NFL was serious about it. So I feel like you can build momentum. Next year, Mets, Phillies, they're going to come back in 2026. So I think that that's what's really important about this. This was a building year, and it did that exactly. And even though tickets were bloated in terms of prices, the stadium was still packed and the energy was fantastic.
No question about the energy. 100% agree with you, buddy. I would dispute, certainly on the Sunday, that the stadium was packed in the vaguely affordable seats, which I was in. But when you looked at the really expensive seats, there were plenty of empty seats. And for me, it comes back to exactly the same gripe we had during the original London series in 2019, that the price of the really expensive tickets was off the charts. I mean, if you draw a comparison between what you're paying in America to what you're paying here, I'm not sure how well it would come out. But for me, if the point of this is to spread the word, you know us dedicated baseball viewers are going to go. But if you're just a guy living in London, you're a lady in London, you're thinking, what shall I do this weekend? Oh, that's interesting. Then you look at the prices. But unless you're passionate, you're not going to pay those prices. You're going to go, oh, flipping hell, that's far too expensive. So it's undermining the essence of what they're trying to achieve, which is spread the word.
Well, yeah, and you add to that, right, that the broadcast, and I had such a great time working with the network formerly known as BT Sport. It was a fantastic experience. But you had to pay to do it. And I know you have red button for BBC, but you know, you think back to the NFL and they've had it on live terrestrial television.
Yeah.
And so if you are going to have the high prices, you got to figure out a way to make it at least very accessible to the British audience with a British dedicated crew broadcasting it.
Well, I have to say, I'm a huge fan of Craig Doyle. I think he's a great presenter, whatever sport he covers. Rugby is obviously his main one, but I thought he did a great job. I'm a big fan of Craig Doyle. I thought he was a great choice. I thought some of the segments, buddy, you must have loved witnessing him in close up with what was going on with Big John, your favorite Eric, and the legend that is such a legend.
Bill Murray,
that's the one.
It was amazing. That was just
it was hilarious.
No, I mean, I can't speak highly enough about that production team. They did a great job. I think that Darren, you know, one thing that people don't realize, you hear the accent of the voice, you think, oh, they can't do baseball. Darren Fletcher is an excellent play-by-play guy. Simon Brotherton, who I've worked with before in that role, fantastic as well, too. I mean, these people are as good as anyone else, and it's very good from that standpoint. The studio stuff with Craig Doyle's, Craig is such a pro. He's a pro's pro. I mean, obviously, would love to have worked with you, Goldie. I mean, you know, all that. I have not watched the BBC coverage. I can't really speak to that. But you know, the more coverage, the better. That's sort of my feeling. And I think to your point about the cost to go to the games, that if you're not going to be able to make it fully accessible to every possible audience from in the stadium standpoint, you certainly need to make it from a TV standpoint.
Okay, so London Series 2020.
It's a thumbs up.
Yeah, it's a thumbs up.
I didn't have a chance to eat the boomstick, though, the meter-long hot dog. So
that's because you were walking around the stadium looking, trying to bump into people. Working? All you did was walk around the stadium hoping people get to recognize you.
I said, look at me. Take a selfie with me. $5.
Yeah. Exactly. It's like, I'm Eric. He just kept on yelling it. I could hear it from the commentary box.
By the way,
I'm Eric.
We're going to get him a t-shirt. We're going to get him a t-shirt.
Yeah. My fondest memory was actually speaking to John Goodman by the dugout, actually. And I actually went up to him and I, you know, we chatted baseball and for a bit. And I had to ask him, obviously being a big fan, I actually had to say to John Goodman, who was there wearing a Cardinals jersey and saying, you know, take me out of the ball game, the same thing stretch. I asked him, you know, of all the films that he's been in on this side of the pond, you know, which of all the classic films or things that he's been in that people recognize him the most or identify him the most with. And I said, you know, because I'm a big fan of Barton Fink and Raising Arizona. So which one do you identify with the most? And he goes, Roseanne.
And I went, of course.
I guess so. Yeah. I guess
such credit to him. You know, I worry about his health. He did seem a little poorly, to be honest, when he came on our telecast. But the one thing he did is he owned up to the Babe being really not one of the better baseball movies. He played Babe Ruth, and he sort of copped to that on our telecast. I thought, wow, that's just, you know, honest guy, really dealing with it. But for me, obviously, and you alluded to it, Goldie, was the Bill Murray bit. If you haven't seen it, it's still floating around in Twitter. You can find the clip, and Bill Murray is just amazing, charismatic, loves his Cubbies, grew up on the north side of Chicago, and he sang Sweet Caroline, and then near the end of it started throwing out all the set dressing to the to the fans. So he's throwing out programs, he's throwing out the baseballs. It was hilarious. He was fantastic.
So given the fact that MLB went, you know, obviously forked out some serious money to get two major A-listers along who were massive Cards and Cubby fans, do we know who they might be targeting for a Mets-Phillies matchup next year?
Well, I don't know that they actually went out and got him, because I know that Bill Murray was in town. They're doing another version of Ghostbusters set in London. So he had been
there.
So he was there. He wanted to go to that. I don't think he was flown out by Major League Baseball. I don't know what John Goodman's situation was. So I think you're going to get fans. I mean, we saw with the Yankees and the Red Sox, we had some great, you know, Spike Lee was out there. I think the Mets have a chance to certainly bring out some big fans. You think someone like Rob McElhenney, who, you know, is the co-owner of Wrexham, you know, sort of involved with British sport in his own right, does Always Sunny in Philadelphia, you know, that he might go out there. Maybe he'll pull a Ryan Reynolds or something like that, because McElhenney is a huge Phillies fan. He's a Phillies guy. So,
and who knows? We might get Jerry Seinfeld in London as well for that.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, I know we've just mentioned, obviously, next year's matchup between the Mets and the Phillies, which, fingers crossed, means we may actually get to see our dear friend David Lengel, who, of course, as we know, is the UK's number one Mets fan. We actually had a chat. Tragically, David couldn't join us on this live podcast, but we did have a chat with him. And I was interested to know, what was the buzz back in the US about the London series? How did it compare? And this is what David had to say.
Was the London series big in the United States? Answer, no. Not in any way, shape, or form. The London series made some noise over there, which was good, which is what it's supposed to do. But you've got two ordinary regular season games between the Cubs and the Cardinals. So who cares about that? Cubs fans and Cardinals fans. So was it big in the States? Yes. Actually, it was big in the States. It was big in Chicago. And it was big in St. Louis. And next year, it'll be big in New York, and it'll be big in Philadelphia. But if you want people in Los Angeles and South Dakota and Birmingham, Alabama, to be talking about the London series, well, it's not going to happen. Okay? In the same way, it doesn't happen when the Jaguars play the Colts in Tottenham or Wembley. Nobody cares. You know, these are just games and they're played in London. Okay, so what? You know, that doesn't matter anymore. You know, the goal is to build audience abroad. It's not to build audience here. So it doesn't need to be big in the U.S. for it to be a success. It needs to have impact where the games are played, and that's the goal. So we'll see. Maybe I'll go over and watch the Mets next year. That'll be fun. That'll be big for somebody from New York and big for somebody from Philadelphia, and the fans will be filled with people from New York, Philadelphia, and the U.K., and that's just fine.
Okay, guys, so we've all been pretty upbeat, and good old Dave drags us down again.
He made the most salient point, Goldie, which is that it really doesn't matter what the attitude is toward it in the United States. It's how it lands in the UK and throughout Europe. Yeah. Because we have to remember that, right, this is a European event. I know, had a lot of friends. I had friends I played pro ball with in Sweden who had come out to go to these games. So, as long as you're building the momentum within Europe, it really doesn't matter what people in the US are thinking.
Look, guys, I'm going to wind this up before we get into the All-Star game chat. I want to wind this up by just one comment. Next year's matchup, you know, they've been looking at rivals. There's no bigger rival than Yankee, both Sox. That was a great one to start with, regardless of which team you support. Then they had the big sort of NL Central matchup, the big rival between the Cubbies and the Cards. And now we've gone NL East. I'm sorry, guys. The most exciting team in baseball is the NL East leaders, the Atlanta Braves. And yet we've got the Phillies and the Mets coming. I have no issue with the Phillies because they're exciting to watch. The Mets? Seriously?
They're a car crash.
Yeah. Go ahead, Eric.
One thing I just want to also recap some stats. So of course, we forget that in 2019, we try to forget that, the game one of that Yankees-Red Sox game in London was 3 minutes away from being the longest ever nine-inning game in the history of baseball at 4 hours and 42 minutes. And it was a hot day. Game one this year was 2 hours and 40 minutes. Basically 2 hours less. And game two was 3 hours and 4 minutes, while game two with the Yankees Red Sox was 4 hours and 24. Thank you, pitch clock.
You know, I mentioned to you guys that I think what was really interesting from my perspective working as the analyst on the broadcast was that historically, right, the analyst's job is to fill the spaces in between the beats, right? So between the play-by-play. And that's typically been a relatively easy job because baseball is a slow, meandering game. This was the first time I've ever broadcast a game from an analyst perspective where you had a pitch clock, and it really created a great challenge because you had these very short spaces in between beats. So if you had a comment, if you had an observation, you better say it quickly or otherwise you were lost halfway through your story. So it was fun and challenging, but sort of an interesting side piece to how the pitch clock changes the dynamic of the way we watch the sport.
And there, in a heartbeat, explains why no one will let me anywhere near these live broadcasts.
There are enough waffles.
And that's
in the
a
world.
Good point. Exactly. Okay, let's move it on. Let's talk All-Star game. Apparently that's been on as well of late. Big question, guys. They don't even play for home field advantage now in the World Series. So is it relevant? Is it getting stale? What's your thoughts?
I mean, look, you look at all the sports and the All-Star games, the All-Pro game, they all have diminished in terms of their interest. Large reason for that, right, is that any game is available. So it's not like this is your one opportunity to see the stars who you otherwise wouldn't see. And that was what was always so great about the All-Star game, is that if you lived in St. Louis, you might see the Cubs players, you'd see the players for the teams that played your club, but then, you know, a chance to see LA or San Francisco or see the Yankees and see their stars. That's not the case anymore. All that said, as All-Star games go, I still think Major League Baseball has a fun feel to it. The Home Run Derby still definitely has a lot of relevance. I think people get excited about it. I don't like the time clock. I like that when they used to have the setup where you had a certain number of pitches and it was however many hit home runs you hit out of those pitches instead of timing. And I get that timing allows you to overcome a pitcher who might not be throwing perfectly, but overall, I still think that that's a great event. But I've said this many times before, is that I think that you throw out the rules of baseball for the All-Star game and come up with new and fun ways to make that event sort of special. So, you know, whether it's, you know, if something happens in the fifth inning that's different from all the other innings, or some other type of like little twist to it, I think that you just sort of change the game around. You know, they have this team in Savannah, Georgia called the Savannah Bananas. And it's this team that sort of plays this game called Banana Ball, and they've changed all the rules, and it's a ton of fun. And I'm not saying that you should change regular season games, but for the All-Star game, coming up with some of those type of rules, I think it would just really add to the experience.
I have to say, on a pure baseball, because I did watch a good section of it. I particularly enjoyed the opening couple of innings. I thought some of the defensive plays were amazing. So I actually thought it was a decent game of baseball. And I agree with you. I mean, when you draw the comparison to the other major sports in America, you know, their All-Star games are pretty awful. And I think baseball's still the best one of the four. So, you know, credit to MLB where it's due. They're still doing a pretty good job. I don't think it's irrelevant. I just wonder if your point, JC, is the right one, that they just need to keep being dynamic and enhancing the fun. It should be about fun at the end of the day. And I agree, the home run derby, there's so much, you know, they've got their kids on the field and there's loads of high-fiving and guys that are normally absolutely spitting blood at each other, the best of mates because they're on the same team and et cetera, et cetera. And I think that's what they should go down. I mean, maybe allow them to wear their own uniforms. Do you think that might be an idea?
Well, they used to do that forever, and it was the best part of it, but it became a marketing thing, right? You have these other jerseys that you can sell that they wore in the game. I think 100% they should go back to their old.
Go back to it. Everybody wears their own team colors. And it's the team photo looks so colorful, and yeah, although the Seattle fans kind of like seeing Shohei Ohtani dressed in Seattle colors, because what might happen in the future, you never know.
Hey, do you remember when we did the road trip in Seattle, guys? Without a shadow of a doubt, one of the nicest organizations we ever
very nice guys.
Do you remember, JC?
Yeah, absolutely
delightful they were.
Yeah. And, that was a great time.
And good sushi at the ballpark. Ichi roll.
Yeah. Ichi roll. Yeah, I remember that.
That's on YouTube, that particular road trip. I've watched that a couple of times in the last few years.
The memories.
Which year was it? Was it the last one?
Six or seven all rolls into one, doesn't it?
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. It wasn't the last one. Okay. But according to my script, Eric, before we round this up, it says Eric has an all-star break info nugget.
Ah, yes. did you know, although this is probably the first year where, the day after the All-Star game is the only one day of the year where North American sports, there's nothing happening. So there's no NFL, there's no NHL, there's no
just baseball. The big four. You got to say the big four.
Okay, right? Now it used to be all sports, but then now it's like because Wimbledon started later this year, Wimbledon encroached, not that there were any U.S. players or Canadian players that, you know, but so yes, Wimbledon was happening and MLS starts early. So what used to be the only day of the year where there's nothing happening in sports in North America, all of a sudden there's like MLS and Wimbledon. So hey, doesn't matter.
Well, I mean, it also speaks to the landscape, right? I think there's fast pitch softball, there's lacrosse going on now, sort of these sports that don't have the same high profile level. Yeah, the summer landscape is definitely great. You go on to ESPN here in the United States now, and they have professional cornhole. I mean, it's crazy. It's just, you can't be hard-pressed to find sports. But yeah, historically, you're right, for sure, that was the one day of rest for sports fans across the U.S.
Number one, we're still going on battle number one. We're still doing the news, which is, by the way, this is the best title you've ever come up with, Eric. I'm going to read it specifically for our listeners. So they're going to enjoy this. Shohei, the way to go home. Love it. Where is Ohtani going? Okay, Shohei Ohtani, guys. I've had a chat with Big Al McKinley, the UK's number one Angels fan, and I've said, basically, where's he going, big guy? He's mortified, as is, in fact, James Holden, the greatest UK fantasy baseball player, second only to you, JC. They both think that it's an embarrassment for the Angels, that they've had pretty much the best two players in Major League Baseball for the last 5 years, you know, and they've not even got a sniff of the playoffs. I mean, How much does that say about what an appalling job the management are doing in Anaheim?
Yeah, I mean, it's heartbreaking, to be honest. I think it's turned a lot of neutral observers into Angels fans. I know I've been rooting for them this year. They're kind of on the cusp of potentially going to the playoffs. They kind of have to jump the Red Sox and the Yankees to really get into that race. But I it just seems unfair. And I know Trout's had injuries, been injured, but it just seems unfair to those two guys. But there have been a lot of bad choices. And I know David is going to talk a little bit about this, but Anthony Rendon, I mean, that was a huge financial commitment, you know, coming off of so much success in Washington. And that cost has been really, really difficult for them. But, you know, I wouldn't count the Angels out necessarily in that race. I mean, I know that like Dodgers, you know, Eric mentioned Seattle, but I've got to believe that if any team's going to really roll it out, go over $500 million easily, that Artie Moreno understands how important Ohtani has been. And, you know, Ohtani, if you remember back when he signed, he chose the Angels where he had a lot of other opportunities. I think that he picked them not because it was the biggest paycheck, but because it seemed like a good fit. So it'll be interesting. He has said that he wants to play on a winner, though. So I think that that will ultimately be his determining factor. But, you know, if I'm the Angels, regardless of whether I'm going to go after him after this year, I definitely trade him at the deadline. I got to be honest, even if it's a bad look, if you can get, you know, a absolute just mitt full of prospects, almost major league ready guys for him, and then bid hard for him again, it doesn't make a difference, right? I mean, yeah. You have to really believe you have a chance at the World Series, and on paper they should. It's heartbreaking, right? Like, I like Patrick Sandoval. I think that they have some pitching. I'm now just sort of blathering on, but yes, I feel bad for Ohtani.
I'm going to read a couple of the thoughts that Alan came out with, which I thought were really interesting. Obviously, this guy lives Angels baseball. He said they basically just keep on signing players just coming off their greatest season with little or no chance of a repeat. He mentions Wells, Hamilton, Pujols, Rendon, and there are loads more of a slightly lower profile. What they never did was sign young, promising pitchers or even well-established, really good ones. Pitching has been the downfall, and you know what they say about pitching winning championships. And Moreno, apparently, according to a recent article in The Athletic, is a very quick to anger sort of a guy. You know, he does not like people disagreeing with him. He apparently, he just loves that big office, big box office name, you know, like Shohei, and doesn't listen to people who really know about baseball. So doesn't build. And he's talked about, you know, the importance of your farm system, bringing through your prospects. And he signed Joe Maddon as coach. And then didn't even have the balls to stick with him when they hit their first dodgy patch. I mean, it was a seriously dodgy patch. But this is the guy that won the Cubs World Series, for God's sake. So if you're not going to stick with Joe Maddon, who are you going to stick?
David.
Okay, well, it's time now to give David his two cents. The big question, what's the buzz in New York? Could Shohei be wearing a Mets cap or even a Yankees cap? What's his thought? This is what David had to say.
Where should Ohtani go? I tell you what, I would like for him to not go anywhere. Because I would like to see it work in Anaheim. I think that Anaheim have a lot of people rooting for them. They want to see Trout in the playoffs. They want to see Ohtani in the playoffs. They want to see these guys on the big stage when it matters most. And I think it would be great for them to make a run. Unfortunately, the Angels are kind of really screwed up because they bought badly in free agency, kind of what we saw with the Mets. Funnily enough, they have a similar general manager. We don't have to talk about that. Rendon was a disaster. They don't have enough pitching. But, you know, if you can trade him and set yourself up with, you know, a couple of major league ready players and a couple of really good prospects, then it makes sense. You're going to, you know, you watch an Angels game, all you see are Yakult yogurt ads and, Japanese ads. You just imagine that that's a huge cash cow for the Angels. So even losing a couple of months of that will probably hit on the bottom line. But you have no choice but to trade him if you're not going to add. If you're going to keep Ohtani, you need to add. You need to go for it in a big way. Don't just keep Ohtani. Add. Bring people in, make a real solid run.
So, JC, Dave's pretty firm there that if they are going to hang on to him and they want and he wants them to, they've got to go out and they've got to buy. They've got to make a run for the playoffs. If they're not going to take that seriously, then they should sell. Do you agree?
Yeah, I definitely agree. I mean, I think that they definitely have holes that they need to fill, but they do have some young players, you know? I feel like Mickey Mioniak is finally coming good. He was the number one pick with the Phillies. He's been playing great for them. So they certainly have some players who can elevate them. But to our conversation before and to Al's comments, it's really the pitching. I mean, they really need to get out and get, you know, a little bit more in the way of starting pitching in order to make things work.
Okay, talk about some other trade rumors, guys. I saw something the other day, and I know my mate Mike Dowling be horrified. Verlander to Giants. I say horrified, possibly not. Verlander may be moving to the Giants is a big rumor doing the rounds. Obviously, he's not at his best season. Injuries at the early start, but he is starting to look like the Verlander of old in recent weeks. How excited would you be about that if you were a Giants fan? Would you be concerned? Or would you be optimistic?
I mean, I still think he has form compared to Scherzer. I think that he's pitched better this year, in my opinion, just looking at them and the way they've thrown. So, you know, the thing about Verlander we've seen in the past is that he's, you know, he rises to the occasion postseason. I mean, he didn't early in his career, but, you know, later in his career he has and late in the season. So, you know, I think that that would give him the sort of drive to probably perform at his best. But if I'm the Mets, you know, getting rid of Scherzer and Verlander is not a bad idea to try and really stock their minor league system, which has been, you know, a bit disappointing. So
and did you know as well, I think I've mentioned this before, that the money that the Mets have spent on both Scherzer and Verlander is more than the entire wages of the entire Tampa Bay Rays pitching staff. There, you know, that's, you can't even make that up. It's great. Love it. But other trade rumors that are circulating at the moment, at the time of recording, because obviously August 1st is the trade deadline. So until then, there's talk about both Chicago teams look like neither is going to make the playoffs. So people are already beginning to pick at that carcass. Dylan Cease possibly to the Astros. Stroman possibly to the Tampa Bay Rays. Who knows? And to raise their wages. That's what's circulating at the moment, at the time recording, as a trade deadline.
Yeah, I mean, I think the two other names you didn't mention, Lucas Giolito, who I think is going to be a free agent next year. He'd be a good rental. And, of course, Cody Bellinger also is going to be a free agent. So if you can get a little bit of something out of these guys for half a season where you don't have any contract with them moving forward, that's usually a value.
Moving on.
I know this is a silly conversation, guys, but it does prompt the thought, what's the most disappointing team this season? And obviously, I'm a Braves fan, so I don't care about anybody else. But I really thought the White Sox would make a run at it this season. I really thought they were going to be competitive, and they have just been woeful.
Yeah. Truly. I mean, the Mets clearly as well, too.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the Phillies have been a disappointment. I think that there's a long litany of teams that really invested highly and have not lived up to expectations.
Awesome. Moving on to some... Anything else? Question mark? TBA? I'm not sure. If
nothing. No. Moving on.
Nothing at all.
Got nothing for you.
Got nothing for me. So clearly it's the Badoo Watch. We're still doing... Are we still doing the Akil, View to Akil?
Yeah, you know what? I think it's very apropos that we're doing today because I was turning on TV this afternoon and ITV were showing A View to Akil. And I thought, hey.
No!
Yeah.
Hey, it was Roger Moore, wasn't it?
Of course, yeah. It's not Roger Moore's best film. Spy Love Me is Roger Moore's best Bond film. Come on.
Fool. I love the way Eric says that. He's so patronizing. He's like, as if you didn't know.
Yeah, come on. but yeah, Akil Badu. Yeah, we're still doing Badu Watch, A View to Akil. You know, in 59 games, what was it, 37 RBIs, 4 home runs, batting .218. I know, and why are we still doing Badu Watch? But I think, because last night I caught a glimpse of the Milwaukee Brewers game against your Braves. And what a guy, Sal Frelick. Remember that name? He went on his debut yesterday, went 3-for-3 and robbed 2 home runs in the same inning in front of his whole family.
I think you're thinking of the player we choose incorrectly, Eric. It shouldn't necessarily be some up-and-coming rookie. I personally like... that's how it started with Weaver Watch, right? It was the grizzled veteran.
Yeah.
It was the guy who, like, people were kind of over, but we were trying to, you know, help stand up. I like that idea. I think it's
Okay,
finding
well,
someone who's just been, he's just, it's like us, the gritty old veterans,
okay, we
right?
gotta fuck okay, I mean, like, again, we'll put it to the viewers. Well, we gotta find a bum who's on the twilight of his career, but we gotta do a watch. Okay, exactly. Let's move on from there.
Just point out if a Major League player was watching the show and then finds out he's the bum we've chosen, you just described him as a bum who's in the toilet of his career.
Honestly,
I don't think we're exactly.
Oh yeah, come
I'd
get
love
me.
it if we had a major league player listening or watching our show. That I would leave that at that and feel like it's a win, That's what it takes.
So yeah, moving on.
So there you go. Okay. Right, our batter number two is New York. What's wrong in New York? I'm not just talking Mets. I'm not just having a pop at my NL East rivals. I'm also talking Yankees. They are stinking up the place. The Yankees are in last place. Not that that's a bad thing in the AL East because it's such a competitive league, but from a Yankee perspective, it's a disaster. The Mets, as we all know, last season spent a host of money. Everybody thought, right, they're guaranteed they're going to win the NL East for the next 10 seasons. Do we blame Buck, the main man? I don't know. Let's first of all, before we get into this with you boys, let's first of all hear from our resident New York resident, the legend that is Mr. David Menengel.
Okay, you want me to talk about the Yankees? The Yankees are a bad baseball team run by a bad general manager and a bad manager. They fired the hitting coach because they don't hit, even though the hitting coach can't do anything to make bad players hit. They have a terrible lineup. They don't have left-handed power, which is what the entire empire of the New York Yankees was built on. And they're not winning the World Series, and they'll be lucky to make the playoffs. They get Judge back, they'll make the playoffs. They don't get Judge back, they won't make the playoffs. So that's the Yankees. The Mets are another bad team. They bought in Scherzer and Verlander, which is fine because they needed pitchers, otherwise they wouldn't have any pitchers. They're not as good as they used to be, but they're fine. Currently, they're not really the problem. The problem is Alonso's in the worst slump of his career, and Marte isn't the same player that he has been his entire career and last year. And you don't even know who these people are in the bullpen. You have Ottavino and Robertson, who's the closer, but you don't know, and this guy, Smith, who's terrible. You don't even know who these people are. You don't know their names. You don't know their stories. And that's because all they do is shuttle up and out, up and down and in and out of here. So they're lousy. And that's the danger of building your team through free agency. And that's fine. Eventually he wants to be the Dodgers, but guess what? It's hard to be the Dodgers. So we'll see what happens. They have a lot of money, but money don't buy you love or wins in this case. So, football season can't come fast enough. You got the Giants and the Jets who have the new fancy quarterback, so we'll see what happens there. But right now, baseball, no good, man. No good.
Okay, not surprising. David's not exactly a happy man. Very interesting. I don't know if you timed it there, guys. He spent 50 seconds talking Yankees and about double the time talking the Mets. And his conclusions were New York baseball is a disaster.
I love David. He is such a multifaceted human, so interesting, a great intellectual. But when he comes on to our show, he is central casting for like the curmudgeonly New Yorker. It's like, everything sucks. The reality of the matter is the Yankees team is a pretty darn good team. They're in the race for a wild card spot. They've got a, Aaron Judge, certainly, he's right, is a sort of a fulcrum in which that team balances, but they still have a lot of talent there. And I think that, the starting pitching could use a little bit. I like Volpe, Anthony Volpe, who I know his batting average isn't great, but like has that power speed combo. I wouldn't give up on the Yanks if you're a Yanks fan. I mean, as a Red Sox fan, I'm thrilled that Boston has completely overperformed this year and like is actually in the hunt. And Chaim Bloom, who I know Dave's a huge fan of, is actually really or should deserve some kudos to the team he's put together. But getting back to, you know, the Yankees, the Mets are a real legitimate disappointment. You know, all the money that's been put into them, they're, you know, they're not even in it.
469. As of recording, JC, the Mets are 46-52. That's a 469 record. They are 7 games back in the wild card. And they've got what? 1, 2, 3, 4 teams ahead of them. And this is in a wild card where you've got 3 teams actually making the playoffs. So we're talking, there are, look, what is that? That's 7 teams in front of them in terms of the wild card chase that at the time. And that's the National League, obviously. In the American League, looking at the Yankees, you're right. They're only 2 games out of the playoffs in the wild card chase. So, yeah, I agree with you. I mean, to suggest that their season is over and that they absolutely have to get Judge back, I disagree with that. I think that's probably just his Met colours tainting somewhat his view on the Yankee situation. But when I do look at that Yankee lineup, it's not exactly memorable. He has a valid point. You remember the Yankees of the Jeter years when we were doing the show on Channel 5, the names, you know, Posada, the names that they had, the legend, the Bernie Williamses of this world.
But you Gouldy, you have the names, you just have them on the real backside of their career, right? Like Giancarlo Stanton's been injured. He is not performing well. And Anthony Rizzo has not done well. If those guys at the top of their career, if you had them near the peak, that would be a very different lineup.
Do you feel he's right that the GM, because he referenced the GM not in the Angels, he talked about the GM in the Mets, he talked about the GM in the Yankees, that they're all to blame? Do you agree there that is the basis of the problem?
I mean, it's really hard to knock Cashman, right? I mean, he's been around for so long. He's had his great moments. You know, I think that they're just cyclical flows for a lot of these GMs, where they hit right on the lottery, which is free agency, or they swing and they miss. And that's what we're seeing, right, with all these teams, is that they went out to free agency and their choices and their success in that market have been below par. So yeah, that's the GM, but a lot of it is, again, you're paying for past performance. How do you determine whether they're going to maintain it and at what level? You know, obviously there are a lot of analytics to do that, but we've seen time and again that you can't really prove, you know, without a certainty of a doubt that you're going to pick up right, unless you're, you know, the Rays, who don't go for these high level guys. They pick and choose a little smarter at the second tier of the free agency market.
I was just going to say, talking about this with Big Al, Alan McKinley, and he said that, you know, he very much relates this to the Angels story, that it's all very well buying these superstars, but you cannot have sustained success. And the definition of success is making the playoffs in his eyes, not just winning the World Series. It's making the playoffs season in, season out. And he just feels that it doesn't matter how many great players you sign, if you don't build from the bottom, if you don't build that farm system, your prospects, and develop a really good, constant conveyor belt of talent. And I sort of feel, if you look at all the teams, even the Dodgers who spend big, they've got a pretty good farm system. I think he's got a point. I do feel that is the future of baseball.
Well, you have to remember, right, like we talk about analytics all the time. We talk about statistics. One thing we don't talk about as much that is legitimate is chemistry and what builds chemistry, having played together with players for a very 100%. Long time and knowing each other. And that's one of the aspects of having a good farm system, is that those players come up together. That was true at the core of the Yankees, right, is that guys like Posada and Jeter, they came up through the system. So Bernie Williams, Mariano, they came through the system. They knew each other. They trusted each other. And that's a big issue. So whether you get free agents and you have to slot them in, you need them to build that relationship. It's a long season.
The bottom line is there's no joy in Mudsville in New York. So moving on.
Okay, batter number 3. Batting cleanup. It's the Hall of Fame inductions. I'm going to get really angry on this one. I warn you in advance. The two that are going forward and are going to be incorporated into Cooperstown, Scotty Rowland and Fred McGriff. I've certainly got no issues with Fred McGriff. Scotty Rowland, looking at his stats, a career 281 average, 364 OBP. He could do it all. He was 5 tools. He stole bases. He had power, 316 home runs. I don't know if his numbers are, you know, clear and obvious. Fred McGriff, 493 home runs. There's a power bat if ever I've seen one. So yeah, I don't have a problem with that at all. So before we get into those that have missed out, can we just discuss these two? What's your thoughts, JC? Scott and Fred, deserving?
Oh, definitely. I wrote a piece many years ago when Bonds was still playing, saying that his career before the cloud of whatever he did off the field, Bonds and, you know, juicing or not juicing, was very, were very similar to Fred McGriff. And I talked about Fred McGriff's career and just, you know, how impressive and consistent it was. And that's what Fred McGriff was. He was just a consistently excellent ball player. You know, he wasn't necessarily the greatest in the league ever, but he was consistently among the best. And I think that there should be a place in the hall for that. Scott Rolen, I think the one factor that you didn't reference that really makes him sort of stand amongst the best was his defensive play. I mean, I don't know if he's Nolan Arenado or Brooks Robinson, but if not, he's in a tier right below with a guy like Adrian Beltre. And he was a great defensive player. And one thing that I think we don't do a great job of at the Hall of Fame is understanding best at their position. And that's what Rolen was. Maybe, you know, you look at those numbers and you're comparing him with the first baseman or, you know, a corner outfielder, but as third baseman go, he was one of the best at what he did.
Okay. You've just raised a really good point. And that is about, and I feel that defensive quality is undervalued when it comes to Cooperstown. And I think that's wrong. I definitively think that's wrong. When you're that good, it should 100% be a big part of whether you're deserving or not to go to Cooperstown. So if we're going to discuss those that have missed out, and I'm ignoring all these, the juiced up ones, where it's controversy that's causing the problems, whether it's A-Rod, whether it's Bonds, etc. I don't want to discuss those. I'm not interested. It's dull. What I want to talk about is those genuine players that have missed out that a lot of people really feel are deserving. And my biggest one, of course, is Andrew Jones, center fielder for the Atlanta Braves. Now, not just a great power hitter, but what was he, a 10-time Gold Glove winner? And I believe there are only four players in the history of baseball that hit more than 400 career home runs and won 10 Gold Gloves. Only four. One's Ken Griffey Jr., one's Mike Schmidt, and I'm trying to remember the third one. Who was the third one? It'll come to me in a moment. We're talking Willie Mays. I think it was Willie Mays. We're talking three of the greatest first-round Hall of Famers. And yet Andrew Jones, yet again, hasn't made it.
Yeah, I don't dispute that at all, Johnny. I know what the argument is against Andrew Jones, right? Is that great peak career when he was at the top of his game, he was amongst the greatest, but a very short window of peak. And when he fell off, it was the side of a sheer cliff. That he didn't have that, you know, sort of smooth runway to the end of his career, and that those impacts. And I think the other issue, and this is always a big issue with the Hall of Fame, which is to a certain degree, it's a popularity contest. So it's not just about your skill. It's about how you were perceived by the media. And I think that some people perceived Andrew Jones as a player who didn't get the most out of his ability, that he could have been even better if he worked hard at it. And that some people believe that he was a bit of a, you know, kind of easygoing. And that may be an incorrect perception, but it's a perception nevertheless. And I think that that's impacted his candidacy.
I understand what you're saying about falling off the side of a cliff towards the end. He still played 17 seasons. So it's not like he was a four-season wonder. He had 17 seasons.
Well, but you look at the end of his career, and those numbers really hurt him because the counting stats, the batting average stuff, all really got diminished from that holding on but not being that good. And the reason his career lasts so long is because he was such an absurdly great natural talent. But that, you know, he was not in a great shape. He just wasn't the player he was at the peak by any stretch.
He won the Gold Glove Award for outfielders every year from 1998 to 2007. I mean, that's consistency. He, in some people's eyes, is the greatest outfielder that ever played the game. You could make the argument. I'm not going to have that conversation now, but a lot of people argue that that is the case. He was an All-Star five times. He won both the Hank Aaron Award, the Silver Slugger Award for outfielders in 2004. I know what you're saying, and I think the point you make about popularity, I think, is on the money, because obviously, I'm slightly biased. I'm a Braves fan, but he could be a bit of a knob. That's the truth.
You know, it's fascinating. I know it predates you, but there's another Brave who probably has a similar type of argument, which is Dale Murphy, who is a back-to-back MVP player at the height of his career. I remember when I was a kid in the 80s, was the probably biggest star in the National League, but also his career fell off. So, you know, it's really hard with the Hall of Fame, the criteria. I think a lot of people think that now it's irrevocably broken because of, you know, the fact that you don't have Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens in there, and you're making sort of arbitrary decisions all of a sudden as to, you know, what makes it, it's tough, you know, It's just tough. And I don't disagree with you I'm more for an inclusive Hall of Fame because, and I say this with the British Baseball Hall of Fame too, which is that this is an opportunity for history, right? Which is that you look at those players and it gives you an understanding of eras. So the more players you have in it, the more you look at them and sort of understand the sport. So I don't think anyone should be in it, but I think a more inclusive Hall of Fame speaks to the educational purpose of what an organization like that should be. So I'm for it, but I understand why there are arguments against it.
Okay, well, I've had my say. Important that you boys have yours. Eric, have you got anybody you want to focus on that you feel should be in the Hall of Fame but isn't?
Yes, I'd like to put the case forward for Lou Whitaker, sweet Lou Whitaker of the Detroit Tigers. When I was a kid, I loved watching him play second base. Now, 19 seasons with it, pretty much comparable numbers almost to Scott Rolen. And the thing is, Alan Trammell, who was shortstop, who came up together with Lou Whitaker, they played together for 19 seasons in a row. There were no two players, tandem shortstop and second base, have played together longer. You know, they have the record for most best, middle infield tandem. So that's my and of course Alan Trammell and Lou Whitaker, they appeared in an episode of Magnum PI. So that should be a shoe-in for the Hall of Fame right there.
To be honest, Eric, I was gonna mention Lou Whitaker too because of his consistency, and I think that level of consistency should be rewarded. But since you chose him, I'll go with a player from my favorite team, which was Dwight Evans, who, if Evans played in the current era, his ability is on base percent. His defensive skills, he would have been a no-brainer for the Hall of Fame. But he really came up during the pre-analytics period, and so I think that he gets overlooked a lot. Him and Bobby Gritch are the two players from that sort of 70s, 80s period, who, if you look at their war and, you know, the few other analytics that usually are kind of raised, they got overlooked. So I put Dwight Evans, Bobby Gritch as sort of my two.
Pete Rose?
Well,
yes,
absolutely.
I'm saying Pete Rose. I'm saying Barry Bonds. I'm saying Roger Clemens. These people reflect their era, and without it, it doesn't fully tell the story. It goes back to what my philosophy is about a Hall of Fame. Yes, I realize that their era reflects some major stains on baseball. There's no doubt about it. But that's the game. And that was the game at the time. And what they did on the field, they did on the field. Other players did stuff. And it explains the sport for that period.
You know the difference, though, for me? I know Pete Rose broke this golden rule in a lot of gamble. But the difference for me is his gambling had no impact on his performance. You know, at
he
the end of the day,
he gambled on games he was managing. That was supposedly...
No, I understand that. I understand that. But it didn't make a difference. It didn't help him hit an RBI, hit a home run. Whereas the juiced up players, the Roger Clemens, the Barry Bonds, etc. You know, the point of that is that their numbers are inflated because of what they did. Now, we all know that both of them, before they got juiced, were still good enough to be Hall of Famers, which is why it's so dumb that they did it. But at the end of the day, that is a big comparative difference between the Pete Rose story. And when you can consider that Major League Baseball are now so in bed with gambling companies when it comes to sponsorship, advertising, it just seems incredibly hypocritical that that's the reason they refuse to let him join.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that they're onerous people in the Hall of Fame. I mean, you got the Ty Cobbs of the world. Pete Rose, probably not the greatest personality. He should be in the Hall of Fame. But in terms of your other argument, that's a specious argument, Gouldy, because I know you're not a big reader, but did you ever read Ball 4, Jim Bouton's book?
No.
That period was rife with greenies, rife with amphetamines. That is a performance-enhancing drug. I'm sorry. You wake up the next day and you're exhausted and you're physically done and you take amphetamines, it helps improve your game. There are players from an era before that, before the steroids era, who did performance-enhancing drugs, who skated by. You're also dealing with the whole issue of who got caught and who didn't get caught in a period where these drugs were rife. So to point your fingers at some and not to others, to me, it's a bit disingenuous.
Yeah, no, I think that's a very good point, buddy. And that's why you're on this show, because you're here to make intelligent comments. So basically, we say yes to all of them. Is that what we're saying? You know how I feel about Barry Bonds, guys. I mean, the fact that he's stolen Roger Maris's record, and he's stolen, most important of all, Hammer Hank's record. That's what upsets me. That's why I feel a bit extreme.
Just last statement on this, Goldie, because I know we have to move on. But
I know. Okay. You look at
everyone's doing steroids. He got caught, probably. But if you look at his statistics compared to everyone else at that time,
yeah,
he was. It is mind blowing how great a player he was, performance enhancing or not. You could give that to every other player in Major League Baseball. I'm not sure anyone would have competed with Barry Bonds in terms of how dominant he was in the game. I don't know him. His personality seems really aloof and not really wonderful. But man, look at the numbers. It is like he was playing slow pitch softball where everyone else was playing baseball.
Yeah, yeah. No, very valid, very valid. Okay, let's move it on. Time for the seventh inning stretch. Okay, baseball book of the week, Eric. What have you got for us?
Well, it's yes. By the way, it was nice bumping into many people at the London Stadium doing the London series who recognized me and not Johnny, they said because of you, Eric, my bookshelf has almost collapsed with baseball books. Well, yes, keep buying baseball books, and I will recommend buying Split Season, 1981. By Jeff Katz. Now, this is, it's from a different era. And it was from my era. I was a little kid, and this was the 1981 season where there was a strike, and the baseball was shut down between June 12th and July 25th. So they decided to have a split season. So whoever won the first half of the season would play the division winner of the second half of the season. And who was in that second half of the season that had to go into the playoffs? The Montreal Expos. Of course, our hearts got broken by Rick Monday, who eliminated the Expos in their one and only playoff appearance. But that was the first time ever that anything of the ilk of an ALDS or an NLDS was actually ever happened, because it used to be just NL East, NL West, AL East, NL West. Winner of each division just plays a championship series. So that was the first amoeba. But of course, that was the year of Fernando Valenzuela, the rookie phenom who went on to win the Cy Young Award. It was a year that that Nolan Ryan hit threw one of his many no-hitters. And it was just a season that almost killed, but also saved Major League Baseball. So that's my baseball book of the week, Split Season 1981 by Jeff Katz.
Are you old enough, JC, to remember anything from the 81 season?
Oh my God, absolutely, Goldie. I grew up in Los Angeles. Fernando Mania was a thing. I remember going to like my Little League games and people talking about Fernando. And Eric alluded to the home run that Rick Monday won to hit to win that playoff game to get to the World Series. And I remember I was a Montreal fan because a lot of my family was from Montreal. Everyone else was a Dodgers fan, and I was at school. And I remember everyone cheering because back then you had day games during the playoffs, which was something you don't have anymore, right, for the TV audiences. And you had day games. And I remember everyone being really excited and me being quite disappointed by that result.
Yeah, so it was heartbreaking.
Well, it's good to know that your love of a baseball book, Eric, is driven by your bitterness as a Montreal Expo fan. But we'll ignore that and we'll move on. What's your other cultural reference? No doubt it's another bitter and twisted Montreal Expo reference.
No, actually, but it actually is from 1981, funnily enough, because actually in this book it's mentioned that, and it's one of those songs, baseball songs, John, your favorite baseball music, by Terry Cashman. One of those songs people have actually said, I can't believe you haven't done Talking Baseball yet. You know, that's true. You know, it's such an iconic baseball song by Terry Cashman, who, you know, played for the Detroit Tigers in AAA minor leagues, by the way. So obviously, you know, he's a nice guy. But he came out in 1981 with this little ditty.
The Whiz Kids had won it. Bobby Thompson had done it. And Yogi read the comics all the while. Rock and roll was being born, marijuana we would scorn. So down on the corner, the national pastime went on trial. We're talking baseball, Klazuski, Campanella. Talking baseball, the man and Bobby Feller. The scooter, the barber and the nuke. They knew them all from Boston to Dubuque. especially Willie, Mickey and the Duke. Well, Casey was winning, Hank Aaron was beginning, one Robbie going out, one coming in. Kiner and Midget Goodell, the Thumper and Mel Parnell, and Ike was the only one winning down in Washington. I'm talking baseball, Klazuski, Campanella, talking baseball, the man and Bobby Feller, the Scooter, the Barber, and
oh
the Duke.
Oh my God, how is that iconic? It's yet another example of a dodgy tune that somebody go, well, I'll make a million by adding in some baseball names. That is not a good song. How do you call that iconic?
Okay, first off, you have sunstroke from being out in Spain. I think that we're going to give you a pass. I mean, that song was the great, yes, put on your Joe Biden sunglasses again. That is one of the great baseball songs. I mean, it's like a warm blanket, that song. It's so great that The Simpsons did a parody of it in their famous softball episode. It's that iconic. I put it up there with Take Me Out to the Ball Game and Centerfield by John Fogerty as one of the three, the triad of great baseball songs.
Well, that's the thing, because
it's
like Terry Cashman,
bad.
Terry Cashman actually, the valid point, Josh, Terry Cashman wrote a parody of his own song for that Simpsons episode, and it was called Talkin' Softball, and it sounded something like this.
Well, Mr. Burns had done it. The power plant had won it, with Roger Clemens clucking all the while. Mike Socia's tragic illness made us smile, while Wade Boggs lay unconscious on the barroom tile. We're talking softball, from Maine to San Diego, talking softball. Mattingly and Canseco, Ken Griffey's grotesquely swollen jaw, Steve Sachs and his running with the law. We're talking Homer, Ozzie and the Straw. We're talking softball, from Maine to San Diego, talking softball. Mattingly and Canseco, Ken Griffey's grotesquely swollen jaw, Steve Sachs and his running with the law. We're talking Homer, Ozzie and the Straw.
So, you know, what's not to like? You got a guy who actually rewrites his own song for a Simpsons episode.
But the Simpsons are the arbiter of what is culture. I swear to God, everything that's ever happened or will happen was first done on The Simpsons as some sort of satire of something that was going to happen or something that has happened. So for them to care enough to bring that song up shows what a social and cultural landmark that song is.
It's a pop cultural necessity, John.
Was it The Simpsons that made these extraordinary predictions that are all coming true, that included the Astros winning the World Series in 2017?
There's a bunch of them. There's a lot of references.
Yeah, there's like a Twitter feed, like, you know, The Simpsons presage, you know, what happens next in the world.
Didn't they predict that Trump would win the presidency when he did? And they've also predicted he's going to win the next one.
I don't know about the last part. Yeah.
But yeah, there we go. Okay. Anyway, that's the song. After this podcast is over, Johnny's got to throw right to it, and in its entirety. Moving on.
What's the name of the song?
Talking baseball.
Okay.
We just played it.
I might have to be mute at that point. Okay. By the way, we should be saying R.I.P. the legend, the total legend, talking icons, proper icon, JC, Tony Bennett. What sad news.
So sad, yeah. One of the greats, all-time greats.
95 years old. Did a concert in 2021 when he was 93 with Lady Gaga. And he'd been suffering, I think it was either Alzheimer's or Parkinson's, for about 3 years. And that's apparently right. It was just amazing concert.
He couldn't remember. Yeah, that's the, he can't remember basic things about his everyday life, but he still remembered the lyrics of his own songs. And like in New York, in the Yankee Stadium, they always play New York, New York after a victory. In San Francisco, they'd always play Left My Heart in San Francisco after every victory. So, R.I.P. Tony Bennett. Moving on.
Okay, moving on. We need a trivia answer.
Well, earlier I asked you. We'll find out at the time of recording, did I actually jinx Austin Riley? I asked you earlier who has Curley has a record for most consecutive games hitting a home run. Was it A, Joey Votto, B, Ken Griffey Jr. or C, Jim Tomei? Now, currently, Austin Riley's got 5.
What can I ask what the record is?
The record is 8.
Is 8. Okay.
Okay, I'll give you that. So, Josh, go first.
No. Okay, that's Johnny, not fair, because he knows the answer. He knows the answer, and I'm okay, just going to copy him.
Move it. Move on.
Okay. I'll go first. Okay. Clearly, I don't know the answer. That's the first thing I should say. Not that that's going to shock anybody.
Goldie, let me just tell you one thing. I have confidence in you.
Okay. Okay. I'm looking at the timer now. I'm going to put a pitch clock on you. Come on.
Okay. I love Ken Griffey Jr. He's one of my all-time favorite players. So my instinct is to go with him. I definitely don't think it's Votto. I'm knocking Joey out the park. But Jim Tomei, God, he could hit a baseball. Oh, I'm going with Jimmy Tomei.
Okay. Josh Chetwin.
So the reason I know this is that they actually, the person who has the record does not have that record alone. When I was a kid, I was a big fan of a baseball card of a guy named Dale Long, who didn't have really much of a career, but did hit 8 home runs in a row. And in fact, Eric is being absurdly cheeky because all 3 of these players had 8 straight home runs. Every answer is correct.
So I'm right.
No, it's not. Every answer is not correct. Dale Long, yes, did hit 8 home runs, the Pittsburgh Pirates in the 50s. But there is only one correct answer in that. I need an answer.
I was pretty sure they all had hit 8 in a row. Okay. I'll go with Griffey Jr. because I know he.
Well, Joey Votto hit 7.
I'm sure he had 8 now.
7 games. He had a home run in 7 consecutive games. Jim Tomei hit a home run in 7 consecutive games.
So
Ken Griffey Jr. is the answer. Thank you, Rhodes. And he is tied with Dale Long and Don Mattingly for hitting. So it's 3 players.
Sure the other 2 had 8. Well, so Gouldie, I was right, but I wasn't fully right. So.
Still give you a point.
And I didn't go with my favorite player. Why did I overthink it? Why did I?
All right, we got 3 minutes.
All dead, I guess.
We got 3 minutes to wrap this up, gentlemen.
Okay. Well, as always, what a tragedy. We come to the end of yet another episode of the Johnny and Josh Show. Thank you for listening. We would love you to do our dirty work for us by pumping it up with the old social media. At the bottom of the screen, hit the like button. We're on Twitter. We're on Instagram. We're on Facebook. You name it. We're there. And YouTube. Oh, by the way, we're also still part of the Nat Coombs stable. So do check out the Nat Coombs Show. That's at the NC Show. There's also a party going on, a watch party on August the 19th. Eric, you're no doubt there.
You never say no
to a free meal.
That's right, free chicken wings and free beer. But tune into on Twitter, MLB UK community. They'll usually post where the next watch party is, either be in Waterloo or somewhere else around the country. MLB UK community, check local listings.
Fantastic stuff. Guys, you up to anything good?
Just working.
That's it.
I'm working on MLB off the bat for TNT Sports. So keep an eye on the next episode on Thursday.
Anyway, that's it from us. Thank you for listening. We'll be back if we're still friends next time. From me, from Eric, from JC. We love you guys.
The Whiz Kids had won it, Bobby Thompson had done it, and Yogi read the comics all the while. Rock and roll was being born, marijuana we would scorn, so down on the corner the national pastime went on trial. We're talking baseball, Klazuski Campanella, talking baseball, the man and Bobby Feller, the scooter, the barber and the nuke. They knew them all from Boston to Dubuque, especially Willie, Mickey, and the Duke. Well, Casey was winning, Hank Aaron was beginning, one Robbie going out, one coming in. Kiner and Midget Goodell, the Thumper and Mel Parnell, and Ike was the only one winning down in Washington. I'm talking baseball, Klazuski, Campanella, talking baseball.
Rockefeller, the Scooter, the Barber, and the Duke. They knew them all from Boston to Dubuque, especially Willie, Mickey, and the Duke. Now my old friend, the Bachelor, well, he swore he was the Oklahoma kid. And Cookie played hooky to go and see the Duke. And me, I always loved Willie Mae. Those were the days. Well, now it's the 80s, and Brett is the greatest, and Bobby Bonds can play for everyone. Rose is at the vet, Rusty again is a Met, and the great Alexander is pitching again in Washington. I'm talking baseball, like Reggie, Queez, and Berry. Talking baseball, Carew and Gaylord Perry, Seaver, Garvey, Schmidt, and Vida Blue. If Cooperstown is calling, it's no fluke, they'll be with Willie, Mickey, and the Duke. It was Willie, Mickey, and the Duke.
Say hey, say hey, say hey.
I'm talking Willie, Mickey, and the Duke.
Say hey, say hey, say hey.